Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing most recently at Defining Ideas for Hoover about the moratorium on evictions that has been in place, I read and follow Richard's reporting, since the beginning of the pandemic crisis. The puzzle here is that most recently a judge, a district court judge, Dabney Friedrich, has said that the CDC, the original driver for the eviction moratorium, the CDC exceeded its authority. This is a tangle of competing authorities in the government. So I turn to Richard only because Richard has introduced me over these years to the idea of takings. And I have his book, At Long Last, Takings, Private Property and the Power of Eminent Domain. And in reading just the beginning pages, I see what the quandary is. Private property is part of natural rights. Natural rights is what the individual possesses, quite independent of what the state says. The state is there to protect the individual rights and under natural rights, not to take away from you your property without due cause. And in this instance, the due cause is a puzzle. Richard, a very good evening to you. Your book is revelatory right away because what we have here is, to my amateur eyes, the state with authority that is either unclear to me or never clear to anyone has taken property, that is, deprived landlords and owners of the income of their property without compensation at this point, and has done it on the basis of what, Richard? Public health. But that's a vague term. Good evening to you.
Yeah, well, I don't think so much that the term public health is vague. I think what happens is it's extended beyond its appropriate use. So there are two issues in this particular case, and the Judge Friedrich decided on the first of those issues, the statutory construction issue, and in so doing, she avoided a constitutional question of takings, which was, of course, the thing that was covered in my book. And what happens is a public health measure is if you are emitting pollution that's going to kill your neighbors, the government doesn't have to pay you in order to shut that down. And the explanation would be that if a private individual had tried to bring this suit, they would not have to compensate somebody who's committing a nuisance against their property. So what the government is, it's an agent for a diffuse part of the population. And to the extent that it does what only private landlords can do without compensation, or rather private parties can do without compensation, then it can do it without compensation as well. But the term public health can't possibly be extended to say, well, you know, it's really very important for public health that everybody get vaccinated. So we're going to go to a bunch of firms and tell them they have to contribute to the fund to vaccinate everybody else on the nature of public health. Because what's happened is the conception of the police power in public health is you stop a wrongdoer from continuing his wrong. It's not that you take an innocent party and require them to pay for something, which in fairness and justice, to use the famous phrase, ought to be done by the public at large. And in this particular case, you can fumigate a particular kind of premise, you could run inspections, you could quarantine. There are a lot of things that you can do, but what you can do is simply pass a general statute or a regulation under the phrase other measures, which by and large says to the landlords, we don't look any further than the fact that tenants want to stay there, and we think there may be a COVID risk and they're being pushed out in one sense. So therefore, what we're going to do is make the landlords forego all rent and make it impossible for them to evict anybody under those circumstances, which is what they did. And so what the judge did is she decided that she was going to run this under the statutory umbrella, and the term other measures cannot be read not entire materia, justum generis. It has to be read as something similar to the standard kinds of health measures that you have in order to make sure that people don't evade the statute, because when you give a list, there's always something that's not quite on the list, and you have to have a savings clause, but the savings clause cannot be used to transform the entire
universe. Let me read from the Public Health Act. The CDC, quote, may provide for such inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, pest extermination, destruction of animals, or articles found to be so infected or contaminated as to be sources of dangerous infection to human beings, and other measures, as in his judgment may be necessary. And other measures is the window through which the moratorium climbs, and it's standing there saying, see, I'm taking care, I'm protecting the public, because you're not evicting someone who may or may not be positive, and therefore they would be spreading the disease. Now, quite aside from what we've discovered about that fact being a little far-fetched, there is the matter of the language of the Public Health Act, and you've pointed to and other measures. Why is that part of the debate, and how does the court regard the and other measures generally, not just here but everywhere?
Well, what happens, other measures is a term which is not moored to anything in particular. And so if you say that it can be standing on its own, as the statute said, chairman of the Public Health Board could take any measures they want to combat health, well, that would mean that they could tax everybody in society in order to clean up someplace else, so that it would be a roving authority. What they did do, of course, is they deal with contamination, infection, fumigation, and spreads and so forth, all of which are the kinds of things that a neighbor could stop, given the risk that it would hold to him. And what you have to do, therefore, is to read the term other measures to cover things that are not on the list but are sufficiently similar to them that you don't want the evasion. So you'll notice that a quarantine is not put on that particular list. But suppose you have somebody who's deeply infectious, it's going to be perfectly appropriate to say that so long as they're sick, you could quarantine them, but it would not be appropriate to say, well, we're going to quarantine New York and keep everybody out because there's a danger that somebody coming on an airplane in would do it. And you see that happening all the time in these particular cases. And what you really ask yourself is, wait a second, does this make any sense? You think of a situation in which somebody comes from one part of New York State to another part of New York State and spreads the infection. They can move. But if you come from out of state, across the boundary where you have a lower risk, they can stop you. And that's a classic kind of abuse, I think, of the police power. But this case goes much, much further, because when you start to evict landlords, you can't even be sure that this is anything that has to do with COVID. The point you'd ask here is, well, now the landlords don't have any revenue and they can't evict their tenants. And suppose there's something that they're supposed to do in order to tamp down on the spread of COVID. They don't have the resources to do it. So you may reduce COVID from one quarter, but you're going to start to increase it from another. And so if you wanted to try to get this within the framework, what you'd have to do is make a much, much more powerful showing that this is analogous to the cases before. You can't do that. So what the judge says is you have to back off of this. If it turns out that you and the CDC could think of some narrower measure that deals with certain kinds of landlords and certain kinds of risk, then we'll start to do that if it comes within the phrase justum generis, that is, of the same kind. The law is very, very funny because there are two contrary impulses that you have to be able to deal with. One of them is if you have a list in a statute and there are other things that are closely similar to it, you want to make sure that people can't circumvent the prohibition by doing something that isn't quite on the list. And so you have to give the government a little bit of extra power. But on the other hand, you don't want to give the government so much extra power that they can transform the universe by saying, for example, we're going to prevent any evictions from taking place anywhere in the United States, regardless of the level of risk that's being associated. And so the idea that this is a relative situation, analogous situation, a similar situation, and so forth, has always been the test. And it's instructive to note that the words here are in Latin. And that's because the guys doing the Latin stuff, when they construed statutes back in ancient Rome, had exactly the same problem and they solved it in exactly the same way. I mean, as you know, John, I'm a teacher and an aficionado of Roman law, and this is yet the perfect illustration of how some very powerful concepts developed very early on in our intellectual history, and they just carried forward as the original Latin, and they have as much application today as they did to the Lex Aquila, which was passed in 287 B.C.
I enjoyed this because it's an illustration of a conversation we had recently where I asked if we were built on top of Rome. And while acknowledging that we have many pieces of architecture, and of course we celebrate Roman history, what this does is demonstrate to me that the natural rights theory that you advance in your takings book is also consistent with Roman law. In other words, they arrived at these things commonsensically, but a twist here. Is it significant, Richard, that the original recommendation by the CDC only applied to federal housing, that is, in some fashion, in possession, possessed by the federal government, which strikes me as quite discontinuous with private property. And then later on, they extended their prohibition to all private property, including property that the federal government had no connection with. Is that an inconsistency in the way they've applied this?
Well, it's a very difficult question. When you sit there and you have given somebody property under a grant, you're a landlord, and so you have some reserved rights within the terms of that grant to change things without giving them compensation. But on the other hand, if the grant is relatively clear and the condition that you're trying to impose now is outside its original term and not within its reserve power, then this would be illegal. And so my view in this particular case is it's a stronger argument to make it for the government, but I would insist that most of these grants have pretty explicit conditions on forfeiture and regulation, and you then have to look at the grant to see whether or not this particular thing falls within it. And my instinct is that probably that would not be the case. But that's the hook. And then when you extend it to everybody, you don't have that hook at all. So what would be a tricky case if the hook were available becomes an easy case the other way, which is what the judge decided. And another canon that she used of construction that's constantly invoked is she said, you're doing these kinds of things. I'm going to construe this statute under the justum generis rule so as to avoid a major constitutional crisis. And the crisis would arise by putting an incredible burden on these landlords to take care of this particular problem when there's always an alternative measure, which is if you want them to engage in not evicting landlords, what you do is pick up the rent as the government. That way you put the expenses on the public at large, and it turns out that the landlords aren't singled out. Once you do that, it's not going to happen. Because if the public at large is going to have to pay taxes, they're going to start asking themselves, is this really worth the amount of money that we have? And so you see program after program that's put into place when people are coercing private parties to do things which would never be funded by the federal government and or by the state government, which is why this takings prohibition turns out to be so powerful. So what happens is you start with a doctrine which looks to be relatively compact, and then it turns out, as I argued in my takings book, you can't find any serious form of government regulation, any serious form of taxation, any serious form of changing liability rules one way or another that escapes scrutiny under the takings clause. It doesn't mean that they're always going to win. That is the challenge. The police power is pretty broad. And so if this were a case where you found a landlord who had in his premises a source of serious virus, what you could do is you could shut that down under the standard authorities without so much as a second thought. So one of the very early cases in this area involving Hyde Park Fertilizing Company, in the 1870s, the Supreme Court said, sure, you can shut down a fertilizing plant if it emits so much gunk and filth into the air that nobody else can breathe. And that was the origin of the police power. And what happens is the police power has to be broad enough so as to protect society, but not so broad as to extinguish all private property rights. And finding that balance is the work of generations. And it used to be, I think, the Supreme Court did a pretty good job on getting these lines right. But recently, with the rise of progressivism, just about anything becomes justifiable.
I want to talk about that when we come back, because you say in your essay that the ambiguous cases can be ruled by the state under Chevron. Let's talk. Chevron shows up all the time, Richard, and I want to talk about it when we come back, because you know Chevron will be very, very helpful to the Biden administration when it goes forward on the environment. Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein, is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, writing at Defining Ideas about the moratorium on evictions in place since March of 2020. Still in place, to my knowledge, but what we're looking at here is more than just does the government have the right to deprive you of your income. It's where does the government find authority to make rulings in cases that are discordant from logic. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.